Louise Alcock is head of zoology at NUI Galway. She has recently returned from an ambitious expedition to peer deeply into one of the last major unexplored frontiers on the planet, the Indian Ocean. This vast 70 million square kilometres of open water bordering Asia, Africa, Australia and Antarctica is not only important to the species that dwell therein, but also to the estimated 2.5 billion people at home in the region. About 95% of it has never been explored before, but now this research team with Louise is shedding new light on the mysteries of Earth's third largest body of water. Louise Alcock is head of zoology, as I said, NUI, and she's in the Galway studio. Louise, essentially the mission was to learn about the ocean to help figure out the best ways to conserve it. Can you tell me more, please?
Well, I had a wonderful time. I was at sea for about half the expedition, actually. I wasn't there for the whole time. I spent 3 weeks at sea in the Indian Ocean, working with an international team, primarily from Oxford University in the UK, but also including international scientists, including Seychellois scientists. And we were doing really some very basic scientific research to look at what is there in Seychellois waters which haven't been previously explored.
Who led the mission? Where did the money come from? Tell me all of that.
Okay, so the mission was led by Necton, which is a charity. It's a very young charity. It was started in Oxford in 2015. Mm-hmm. And their aim, they say, to change knowledge of the world's oceans. When we say increase our knowledge, it sounds incremental, and they want to do more than that. They really want to change our understanding of the ocean. And they want to speed up the protection of the deep ocean, particularly, which they refer to as the last unexplored wilderness of the Earth, which I think is a fair point.
The inner space, as we know it as.
Yes.
Yeah, but preserve it how?
Well, the Seychelles is a very interesting place because they're very forward-thinking on the ocean. And their president signed an agreement which was the first debt for nature swap to take place in the oceans. A few years ago, about 10 years ago, they defaulted on their national debt. And a charity, the Nature Conservancy, then offered, the World Bank came in first, but then a charity offered to buy some of their debt in exchange for protection of their oceans, for 30% protection of their oceans. And their president signed up to this, and now they're putting in place, they've put some protection in place already, and they're doing a big marine spatial plan. Basically, they're studying their ocean to plan which are the best bits to protect and which are the best bits to exploit, because of course people's livelihoods depend on this ocean as well. You can't just protect the whole thing. People have to use it. And so the science that we did will feed into that marine spatial plan to set up this 30% protected area in the Seychelles waters.
So how deep did you go?
We didn't go terribly deeply. We were around atolls, but we went fairly deeply. So the deepest we were working was 500 metres depth. And by then you're out of the photic zone. There's no light. You're in darkness. So we worked right from the shallows, from people diving in 5 metres to running submersibles, then at 30 metres, 60 metres, 90 metres, 150 metres, down to 250 metres. And below that depth, our work with the remotely operated vehicles kicked in, and we worked with them down to 500 metres.
Louise, in terms of the approach that you're taking, is this an observational type approach, or are you actually taking samples as well, say, of the actual seabed itself, the seamounts and so on?
Yeah, we took water samples, and we took some biological samples. Obviously, we want to do the minimum amount of damage, so we don't want to sample intensively. But when you're working in such a remote place that has been studied so little, one of the very difficult things is to identify all the species that are there. And to do that well, you really do need physical samples. So we had a permit to collect a certain number of samples at each depth. And our aim was really to take examples of everything that would appear on our videos. These will be taken now to a taxonomic workshop where experts from around the world will be invited, so that we get really, really good identifications on the physical samples. And that will allow us to do really, really high quality video analysis.
And in terms of the area that you've actually picked, did you select an area that you thought at least to be pristine, or are you have you got transects that are covering areas that you think already have been, in part at least, exploited by man?
Yes, so the expedition actually covered quite a wide area. So it went down right as far as Aldabra, which is actually very close to the Comores. This is actually a World Heritage Site, and it's, I guess, the most remote bit of the Seychelles. And this is an area that that was first protected 20, 30 years ago. So that has had some protection. Now, the protection was really for the atoll. It didn't extend that much out into the sea. But with the atoll protected, there's been very little human activity there. There's a research station there and not very much else. So that has been very protected from pollution, for example. And so we had areas like that we expected to be much more pristine than others in different parts of the islands.
And in terms of the species then, the type of species that you found and what you hope for in terms of perhaps even new species?
In the very shallow waters, it's what you would expect from tropical atolls. There's a lot of stony corals. And as you get deeper, the stony corals decrease. They need light. Stony corals have these symbiotic algae, the zooxanthellae, in them that photosynthesize. And so once you get below a certain depth, there is not enough light to support those zooxanthellae. So the corals change then from stony corals into a much higher proportion of octocorals and black corals. And that's exactly what we saw. At about 60 meters, the stony corals started to decrease and the other corals came in. And we had beautiful corals really right down to the deepest depths we looked at 500 meters. So we saw a sort of classic transition that we would expect. One of the lovely things was there were parts that were just so pristine and so beautiful with really enormous black corals. I mean, some sites were absolutely marvellous.
And in terms then of the larger species, because I spent a few weeks some years ago fishing off Kenya in the Indian Ocean, and I was absolutely amazed at the range and variety of billfish, for example, particularly the swordfish, which are down in the big trenches. Had you observations of these? Did you see these actually underwater in those trenches?
Yeah, so one of the marvellous things about the expedition actually was the technology that was on board. So we had two bits of technology that were really, really good for seeing big fish. One was a drop camera that we would drop to a certain depth at night, and it's on a timer release. You program it to take pictures every, say, 10 minutes or whatever interval you want, and then it's time to release itself after 12 hours, come to the surface. It's got a beacon, you go and collect it, and then you download the images from the camera. And on those camera images, we saw a fantastic array of sharks and other big fishes. But the other amazing thing was that we had two submersibles on board that dived to 250 metres. These were little Triton submersibles, which are basically an acrylic sphere that two people sit in, a pilot and a scientist. And really, you have a 360-degree all-round view from this tiny little sphere. And of course, what you see then is just amazing compared to what you would see on an ROV, where you have one immovable camera feed that's coming up to the ship. So you're sitting in the sphere and you can see all around you. And we saw sharks, we saw hammerhead sharks, we saw thresher sharks. I saw a sunfish. It was just so amazing. It must have been 2 metres by 2 metres, and it swam literally right up to the window of the sphere, looked at us, and then swam away. So the big fishes that we saw were just spectacular.
It all sounds wonderful, like a busman's holiday that you were on there, to be honest with you. But, you know, did you see anything bad? Did you see any problems we should be worried about? I mean, what you're creating there is a beautiful rosy garden under the sea.
Yeah, so I joined the first half of the expedition, which was when we went down to Aldabra. And this is the site that has been conserved previously. And I mean, I think this just shows that conservation does work. And if places are protected from pollution and other things, they are amazing. So everything I saw was from these very remote, very protected areas. Now, I haven't seen the footage from other areas, so I can't answer your question whether it's all this rosy. But I mean, it was really nice to see that these remote and protected areas really are as special as we expected them to be. And of course, what the Seychelles government did, I think, 2 years ago was they extended the protection around Aldabra, and that's much bigger now than it was historically. And so that area will remain protected. And of course, the importance of these protected zones is if you have an area that is protected, they act as a source for marine life for other parts of the ocean that are less well protected, you know, because there is reproduction and growth going on here that feeds the rest of the ocean.
And an example to the rest of the world. But did you notice any plastic pollution? We're hearing a lot about plastics in our fish, actually, you know, that they're getting into the food. Did you see much plastics in the ocean?
Oh, yes. So this is something that, I mean, Aldabra is protected by not having people living on it, or apart from the small amount of people at the research station. But of course, plastic comes from everywhere, and it comes in on currents. And Aldabra is sitting in terms of plastics, in a very unfortunate place in the Indian Ocean, and it is just getting plastic coming in on the currents. I mean, there's a lot of initiatives going on in the Seychelles at the moment, and as part of these initiatives, there was a team doing an Aldabra cleanup, cleaning up the World Heritage Site. It's been ongoing for several months, and they cleared some phenomenal, I think it was like 22 tons of rubbish. I might have that figure wrong, but it was some enormous amount of rubbish and hundreds and thousands of flip-flops. And of course, they come from beaches elsewhere in the world and they float on the ocean and then they wash up in this remote area and they get there. And Aldabra is this amazing place with tortoise nests. They've got giant tortoises and so they've got tortoise nesting sites. And these places are covered in flip-flops. That is a consequence of people's behaviour elsewhere in the world, not within the Seychelles. So we all have to think about taking care of the oceans. And part of this cruise was not just science, actually. It was multifaceted. Obviously, we wanted to do the science. We wanted to inform the marine spatial plan. But in fact, a lot of it was about ocean literacy. There was a small team from AP News on board throughout, and Sky News did some live broadcasts from the ship. So we're trying to raise awareness of the importance of the oceans and the damage that we can do to the oceans and how we can stop doing this damage.
The actual community themselves, it sounds as if there's loads of people now parachuting in to do all sorts of different surveys. How does the community of the Seychelles benefit directly from this in terms of information about new protected areas, about the species that might be available, indeed about new harvests that might be available? Is there a direct connection between the research and the actual communities themselves?
Yeah, so the Seychelles Wild Government is fully involved in this process. And so we had Seychelles Wild scientists on board. And one of the aims of the mission was, in fact, capacity building. Because obviously, if you haven't had access to all this gear before, you don't have the experience to use it to its full capacity. So it was it was a real pleasure to meet Seychelles Wild scientists and work with them. And they will continue. You know, they'll be involved in the data write-up. They will be involved in the future. And they will, of course, be working on the Marine Spatial Plan. So it was very much involvement of the Seychelles. But also, I mean, the Marine Spatial Plan is going to be there for the benefit of the Seychelles. They rely on tourism hugely and fishing hugely. And the tourism relies on beautiful, clean beaches. And we've all seen photos in the brochures of the Seychelles. You know, it has to stay like this, has to stay that way if tourism is going to be successful. And the fisheries have to be managed properly. We know that there have been problems with the yellowfin tuna fishery being overexploited. There are many other fisheries in the area that aren't overexploited. And good management, of course, it's very difficult to manage a global ocean fishery. Do you know that? I mean, you've already talked about how large the Indian Ocean is, and there are many states invested in these fisheries. And a multinational fishery is much harder to manage well than a single nation fishery. But all the data and information that we're collecting for a Marine Spatial Plan feeds into other initiatives that are going on to manage fisheries.
Well, what are the initial findings? I know you've only kind of come back and you've got a few months to put it all together, but anecdotally?
Well, anecdotally, we've already touched on one. That's that it's really rich in top predators. We've seen that from the submersibles and from the drop cams. And that's usually a sign of a healthy ecosystem if you have a lot of predators. Another thing we've already touched on is Aldabra was looking pretty pristine, particularly the stony corals. I mean, it's very hot there. We would perhaps expect some coral bleaching, but we didn't see any in Aldabra. And that may be a consequence of the fact there aren't other pollutants there, because, of course, other pollutants are stressors. And when you combine stressors, the effect on the corals is even worse. So it may be that the absence of other stressors is making the corals a little bit more resilient to the warmer ocean. We probably saw lots of new species. We're a little bit cautious about this because you really do have to look at things under a microscope and do molecular work, sequence DNA, that kind of thing, to really be certain that you've got new species. So the taxonomic workshop that's coming will establish that, but I'd be very surprised if there weren't new species in there.
And in terms of the actual seabed itself, obviously we're going to have various industries and various corporations interested in these sort of pristine seabeds in terms of perhaps exploring them and so on. And I'm sure you'll agree that we have made great use out of the seabed survey investment that we've made in Ireland over the last 20 years or so. We actually have an extensive map now of our offshore and inshore marine territories. Is there something similar like to that happening in the Seychelles, where the actual seabed is being taken into account as well as the creatures that are living in or around it.
What would that do, Ken?
Well, in reality, if you have a situation where you have a lot of exploration and you have people moving in and looking for either for deposits of minerals or looking for oil deposits or whatever, there's a real risk in terms of perhaps corals, perhaps deep water corals. So these things really have to be thought about in the round, not just in terms of what's in the water, but what is underneath the water.
To conserve.
To conserve. And I think manage
not
as well.
Not to explore in the sense that drilling for oil or anything like that,
well,
or
no,
fracking.
But to
whatever.
Conserve. But at the same time, we also have to be conscious that there may very well be a situation, as was mentioned earlier, where you could actually direct people towards other sources where it's a sustainable source of income for one thing or another. But those that seabed mapping is just so important in terms of knowing what your territory physically looks like, as well as the biological work that's ongoing now in terms of what's above it.
Yeah, I totally agree about the importance of mapping. I mean, I work a lot in the Northeast Atlantic here in Irish territorial waters, and the seabed maps that have been produced for Ireland have been so useful in that work. And that is lacking to a great extent in the Seychelles. Sometimes when we were looking at charts, the last time that there was any data produced was in the 1800s. So one of the things that the expedition was doing was mapping. So we were producing our own bathymetry maps. Partly this informed our science. It's very dangerous to dive with submersibles when you've got no idea what's below you. So we were trying to produce maps of the areas before we dived. But we had a team out in a small boat with multibeam on board, mapping every day, basically, while we were running other operations off the mothership. Now, you've said already about the size of the Indian Ocean territory. What we did is a tiny, tiny part of that. So it obviously needs further initiatives. And you know, as Ken said, there are minerals in the Indian Ocean. There will be likely attempts to license areas. There's probably things like cobalt and rare earth minerals there as well. There is probably a high chance that somebody is going to want to exploit some of the seabed. And so mapping going forward will be, I think, a really important thing to achieve.
I saw a documentary on TV recently about mining for diamonds off the coast of South Africa.
Mm.
And you could have knocked me down with a feather. I didn't know this stuff was going on.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
at sea.
The last time I was working, Louise, in Greenland some years ago, and the amount of exploration that was going on, the number of different languages that were being spoken in the ports, all of this was going on in huge areas of the ocean being looked at, particularly as the ice retreated up through the Northwest Passage. And there were all sorts of new technologies.
But we should be worried about this, surely, to God, Ken.
I think it has to be managed. And I think that's where these international agreements, there's one called UNCLOS, which is the agreement for the management of the seas. Those sort of agreements are absolutely critical in terms of making sure that we're ahead of the posse in relation to this. And that's why there's been a lot of debate in terms of the territories in the Antarctic. The Arctic and the Antarctic. A lot of those, thankfully, have already, by agreement, been preserved. But we still have to be conscious of the fact that the areas such as Louise is looking at and these other areas within the Indian Ocean and some of the other bigger oceans, we really, as I say, need to be ahead of the game in this. And it's a very difficult mix between trying to get all of the factors together and mobilised in terms of fighting climate change issues, while at the same time trying to look at resources and alternatives. And I think that's really where we have to start looking, is looking very broadly and trying to get all this mapping done. And mapping is absolutely fundamental to what we're about.
Yeah, and even if the world's really progressive and decides to leave all the oil and gas in the sea floor that is there, I think people are still going to come for rare earth metals. You know, we need it in all our mobile technology and all this kind of thing. And that's not going to go away. Even if we divest ourselves of fossil fuels completely, people are still going to come mining for the deep ocean. Yeah, you need data to make an informed decision.
Yeah, no numbers, no management. I mean, that's always my mantra.
Anyway, Louise, thank you very much indeed. And we'll put a link on our website, rte.ie/mini. Louise Alcock, thank you very much.
Thank you.